in today's episode.
So when my mom died, I was 8. Okay. And my dad told me something really powerful at that time. We were outside our apartment. This was in New York, on 72nd in York.
Yeah.
That's where we used to live. And he basically said, look around the world. Mm. Has anything changed? No.
Oh,
my. Yeah. I said no. I was 8 years old. I said no.
Your dad's a cheat.
No, it gets better.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, for them it hasn't, but for us it has. Sit down.
Oh, my God. I'm going to drop that. That's the mic. Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah. Like, okay.
Man, your dad's got bars, man.
Yeah.
how did you take that as an 8-year-old?
I think he really believed in being strong despite what's happening.
Yeah.
And being able to just get through things. And it doesn't mean you don't have emotions or feelings. It just means that, like, he wasn't rationalizing. He was literally taking a feeling and an emotion that he was feeling and turning it into a fact and a truth. Nothing's changed for anyone else.
It's changed for us.
It's changed for us, though. Forever.
This is Bill Alzaidi, and you're listening to Creator Lab, where I'm learning from the greatest entrepreneurs and change makers of our time. We go beyond the surface to find the nuance in what it takes to turn your ideas into action. In a world of black and white headlines, we're looking for the magic in the gray. We're building an open and respectful community of doers who want to take action by creating. Whether that's a mission to help millions of people through a nonprofit, building a company worth billions of dollars, or changing the world through your art, we are all creators. Now let's get into the show. This episode is sponsored by Squarefoot, where growing companies find their place. They're a new kind of commercial real estate company that understands the needs of growing companies better than anyone else. They've helped over 1,000 growing companies find the right space for their needs without the hassle, uncertainty, and the time suck normally required. They combine technology that minimizes the stressful parts of the search with brokers who are market experts to help you at every step along the way. Visit squarefoot.com/creatorlab to start your search today. Heat and Shot, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I thought we were doing the lip.
Yeah, there we go. Why not?
I was doing like the brown guy bump.
Oh, brown guy bump. Got it. Okay.
That sounds like something else, actually. All right. Well, listen, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
We're here at TuneIn Radio in San Francisco. We're doing a Silicon Valley takeover. We've just had Rahul, you know, from Superhuman Inn. We've got some other awesome people coming in.
I'm here right now, right?
Yeah, so this is...
Let's do this.
You set up a challenge. You said that this is going to be number one. It has to be.
It has to be number one.
If not... then we're not even putting
it out. It's like my friends at Drift say, 6 stars or bust. They don't say bust, but I do. So like number one or bust is what I say.
This is it, man. I love the energy. I kind of needed a pick-me-up because I was up way too early today.
Well, but I saw this coffee here that was totally done.
Yeah,
kind of like you chugged it. So like,
yeah.
You got to give some energy
here,
right?
I also have these lines, man. I don't want to plug them too much.
Are those any good? I don't know.
Yeah.
Plug them. I don't care. I've never tried it.
Well,
what is that?
More like they're my friend's company, but I also don't want to necessarily do it for free. So
let's not talk about it.
That's Lion's Mane, Four Sigma. They're good guys if anyone's interested. But anyway,
it gives you energy.
It's kind of this, I don't, it's supposed to be good for your brain.
I like things that are good for my brain.
Yeah, it could also just be like, I don't know, it could be just made up, but I think it,
like
I
a
like
placebo.
Exactly. That was the word I was thinking of. Exactly.
I hope they do some research at some
but
point.
But placebo is real. So
placebos are real.
And mushrooms are cool.
Mushrooms are cool.
Yeah. Anyway.
This is not the psychedelic kind.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, so you have done a bunch of stuff. So today is going to be a cool amalgamation of random stuff I wanted to talk to you about for an hour and a half or whatever we end up doing. But for people that don't know you or haven't seen you or heard of you before, could just give us kind of like the quick pitch of who you are?
Yeah, quick pitch. So I was born in Africa. I was actually born in Zambia.
Oh, really? All right.
Yeah, and this will be quick, I promise.
No, this take your time.
I turned 38 a couple weeks ago, so I'm going to give you my life story real quick, right? So I was born in Africa. Zambia. We also lived in Zimbabwe. The two memories I remember about Africa are the smell and taste of beets.
Beets.
Oh,
don't
really? Know why. I haven't even looked into it. And number two is I think there was a lion in our backyard once.
Yeah,
that's a lion. I think so.
Like a real one.
I don't know. Oh, and the third bonus Knight Rider and A-Team. I remember watching those with my father.
How old were you when you left?
Before I was five. So I left when I was five. Oh, and I haven't been back since.
Really?
No,
by purpose or just you haven't had time?
Just haven't done it.
That seems like something you'd want to do, no?
I don't have a draw.
Really?
It's really weird.
That's interesting.
Maybe I will in 10 years.
This sounds like we're going to turn this into like a therapy session.
For
both
me
ways.
Or for you?
Yeah, yeah. Elijah.
So I moved to New York when I was five.
Yeah.
I'll fast forward. I moved to Southern California when I was 12.
Yeah.
And then the way I found myself in the Bay Area is I ended up going to UC Berkeley.
Okay.
I stayed about 5.5 years because I kind of enjoyed the Bay Area for a number of reasons. And then I moved back down to Southern California. And I got married.
Yeah.
And we were actually living with my father.
Mm.
And we, so very brown. You used the word before. So,
yeah, we're allowed to do we're allowed to say
hey,
that.
You know, it's cool. Yeah, yeah. Brown is down, though. Yeah, so that's all good. Yeah. Don't let me go into all the other ones, though. But anyway, so I basically found myself coming back up to the Bay Area like once a month.
Okay.
This is from about 2005, 2006 onwards.
Mm.
And so in 2007, we decided it was time to move.
Okay.
And so we moved up here.
We say
my wife and I.
You and your wife.
Yeah.
Okay. And for your wife is Neil Patel's sister.
Yes.
Neil Patel is a guy who you started several companies with.
Yeah, he's an online marketer. I've known him since he was 11 and I was 15.
Yeah.
And he's my brother-in-law now. And you know, if you know his name, then you know that he's a marketer.
Yeah. Well, and if you type in SEO onto Google, he's one of the top ranking people.
Yeah,
as I'm sure he'll tell you
straight up.
Yeah,
yeah, he'll let you know.
Yeah, sure. He will let you know. So maybe we'll talk a little bit more about how you've partnered with him a little bit later.
Yeah,
working with family, that sort of stuff. But so you moved out here, but you've started several companies and you've kind of built a following, if you want to call it that, in Silicon Valley. You've got, I know you might not necessarily care about vanity metrics, but you've got like 250,000 followers on Twitter and you are often tweeting and beyond all of that kind of vanity metric stuff, I've heard from a lot of people that you're incredibly helpful. And I'm not saying this just to be nice, but even myself, my experience, like I DM'd you and you actually got back to me and that was like a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
And now we're in a room having a good time.
Yeah.
So thanks first of all. And two,
of course.
You know, like you have really served the, I'd say you've been like a thought leader, and I don't always like that term, but you've actually brought a lot of concepts and shared ideas that are prevalent in so many different companies. So I just interviewed Rahul from Superhuman, and we were talking about the product market fit stuff, and he referenced you, not even knowing you were coming in.
Yeah.
So it was just like...
I bumped into him on the way out, and we hugged it out. Yeah. We haven't seen each other in a while.
All right,
so,
great. Yeah. So tell me, there's a few companies you started that people might have heard of. So could you give a snapshot of what they were in the past?
Yeah, totally. So I started a consulting company back in the day with Neil Patel, my brother-in-law. Because he was getting out of high school, I was getting out of college, I didn't really have much planned.
Yeah.
And my now wife and his sister basically said, hey, you two should work together. He had one customer paying him $3,500 a month for SEO.
Wow.
That's it. Yeah. And so that was my first company. And Neil and I basically started working together, started making money pretty quickly, mostly because of his skill set.
Yeah.
And then...
Did you know anything about this world yourself? Or?
No, I knew how to download movies and TV shows on Kazaa.
Yeah.
That's it. What's up? Right? Yeah. And that was back in the day. And so that's what I knew. I've had a computer since I was 8.
Yeah.
So very proficient with it. Yeah. I typed super fast by then already. Yeah. I've hit probably 130, 120 words a minute at my peak.
Oh, watch out.
And then on my phone, I can probably do close to like 80, 90, maybe 100.
Oh,
even.
Serious?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't mess around. I work from my phone. It's one of the
full
larger
time.
iPhones. Yeah. Well, not full time, but I work from my phone.
Well, we might have to go into that in a second. Yeah. I might have to see on camera like how you type that quick.
Sure.
Because that's very quick.
Yeah.
Is that quicker than normal? What's a normal
person? I don't know. I have no idea.
I feel like you're
really
competitive enough to know.
No, I'm actually not that competitive.
Really? Right.
I'm competitive with myself. If I want to get good at something, I get good at it.
Okay, cool.
It doesn't matter
what
someone else is doing.
All right, fair enough.
I actually prefer that. So anyway, like I started that, and then we wanted to build a bunch of software products.
Yeah.
Or actually, more importantly, I think for context, we wanted to get out of the game of we spend our time, we make money.
Yeah.
Because we were doing a lot of the work at the time.
Yeah.
And we had people that we work with. And we were remote at that time already. We had an office at one point, but really it was a remote company. And so that was from since 2003. And so then we started building software products, tried building about a dozen of them, and got really lucky with one called Crazy Egg, which is still around today about 14 years later. We launched it in 2005, and that's at crazyegg.com. And then we were building...
That was heat maps, right?
Yeah, it was heat maps. We were one of the pioneers, I like to call it.
Because
there were a couple other companies at the time. They don't exist anymore.
Who
were
the others back then?
There was one company called Click Density.
Okay.
And then these folks at Clicktail, which still exist, but they were very focused on recordings and tracking like mouse movements. Actually, not recordings. They were tracking mouse movements, which was a different game back in the day.
And just to clarify for people that aren't aware of a tool like that and analytics. So if you own a website, you probably use Google Analytics a lot of the time. You can see who came to the site, how many people, where did they come from. Your software was showing people what they did on the page.
Very visual. So we were one of the first heat mapping tools. We are still probably the most popular for that.
Yeah.
And so that's Crazy Egg. It's self-funded. It's now, 14 years old roughly?
Yeah.
And we are growing. And it's a business
that's
been around
that long.
How involved
are you with that business still?
My involvement ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
And so today I'm not as involved as I was in the past.
Yeah.
For a long time, my wife was running it.
Okay.
And we currently have a general manager who's running it at the moment. And so the way I think about this is like we were at that time, the way we thought about it is we built this software. And we wanted to build more software because we were just in that mode.
Yeah.
And so we were building a second product. And by that time, like I mentioned, it was 2007. Mm. And we actually moved up to the Bay Area, my wife and I. And we decided to raise money for the second product. And that ended up being a company called Kissmetrics.
Yeah. And so tell me that, why did you, because you bootstrapped the first one.
We call it self-funding.
Self-funded, sorry. I like
I don't have boots, I don't have straps, I don't pick myself up.
Well, actually, I'd love to actually go into that.
Sure.
Why the language, which I actually do like that difference.
I prefer accuracy, right? So like I'll talk to you for an hour and a half, this is another thing.
Yeah.
And my head will be full of your language.
Yeah.
And I'll know some words you use, right? And by then, I could give you some feedback on your language. Not that you care, and I don't really annoy people with that, but like, it's just something I really value. We already, as human beings, have such different perspectives as individuals. Our perspective on the world is individualistic. So I think the words really matter. And so that's my sort of longish rant on it, which is basically the words matter. And if we're not bootstrapping...
With self-funding.
Yeah, and bootstrapping, if you look up all the theories, it came from back in the day when we had boots and they were doing that. And like that's how they picked themselves up and moved along the road or whatever.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So we're self-funding. That's what we do when we don't raise money in the beginning.
Do you think, just to go into that for a little bit more, do you think that bootstrapping has a negative connotation? Is that, or do you think it comes from a place that you don't like, you don't, regardless of it being accurate or not?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I care more about the closest thing to the truth, then I care about someone's opinion about the word, which I know is a little nuanced.
No,
I think that in the investment community, it definitely has a negative connotation.
Mm.
That being said, some of the largest successes, some of them, started self-funded.
Yeah.
Like Atlassian.
Yeah.
Started self-funded.
Yeah.
Trello. Started self-funded. These are all massive successes
Buffer,
at this point.
I think you were,
Buffer was early self-funded, then they raised money, and then they gave back the money, and so they've had a journey.
Yeah.
But a lot of things started self-funded even until they got venture, and then once they got venture, the latest company is Webflow.
Yeah.
I believe they were self-funded for the longest time, since like 2012, and recently they raised a bunch of money, right? And it's announced now. So it's not that it has a negative connotation anymore. I think it's just a thing. And you self-fund until you don't.
Sometimes
you do it for a long time.
Yeah, that's cool. It kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you've read the book by the Pencils of Promise guy, I forgot his name, Chase.
I don't think I have. Yeah.
But it's about the nonprofit world and using the term nonprofit, you think of, that's like kind of a negative way of describing something. And we call another company a for-profit company.
Right.
When he kind of coined the term, I think, around for-purpose. Yeah. Purpose is kind of a loaded word nowadays.
Well, it's like, it profit first or purpose first,
exactly.
Right? Or is it growth first? I mean, there's a lot of nuances to that. And I think it boils down to the culture and the type of business you want to build.
Yeah.
And the nonprofits, like my father has multiple nonprofits, right?
Yeah.
He still needs to make money.
Yeah,
And if not make money, he needs to get money.
Yeah.
Right, so it's a lot of it is like how you get money and how you think about the money you use.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great, it is a nuanced way of looking at it, but I think it's a kind of positive spin on something that, you know, 40% of Americans don't trust charities.
Correct.
And then there's, but when you talk about the good that you're doing rather than we don't happen to make money, because that's what people think of when you say nonprofit. Anyway, we could probably spend 2 hours on that, so we'll
You have a lot of experience.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, so so great, Matt. So you worked on that. You've also so QuickSprout. You mentioned. You didn't mention QuickSprout. No. Sorry, you mentioned Crazy Egg and Kissmetrics, not QuickSprout. So what was QuickSprout?
Yeah, QuickSprout is actually my brother-in-law's blog originally.
Yeah.
And he was blogging there, and I think, I don't even remember what year, maybe 2006 he started. And it's a property that he was blogging on and running for the longest time. And now he moved over to neilpatel.com.
Yeah.
And he has a agency called Neil Patel Digital.
Yeah.
And I've taken over QuickSprout and partnered with some folks who are running it. And it's a... think of it this way, like it's a very great property where Google likes it.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of opportunity to make Google like it more and monetize it in different ways. We attempted at building like a SEO tool and a marketing tool, and we kind of decided not to do that.
Yeah.
Mainly because it's a crowded space, and the things we wanted to build, either the world wasn't ready for, or we were just wrong in our hypotheses around them.
Yeah. And that you mentioned building a tool again and moving from trading your time for money, which is, I've heard you've mentioned it before as well. Do you still think of it in that way? Is that something you're always trying to move away from? If you're actually selling your time, there's a limited amount of time, obviously. At the same time, you know, your brother-in-law Neil Patel now has an agency again, and he's trading his time, but arguably he's still scaling it because he's got people that work there.
So. Yeah, I think we were doing a lot of the work initially and didn't think about it in the same way we would today.
Yeah.
We also just probably stopped too early, right? Because the software was working, and software margins are better. Software scalability, especially back then, was better.
Yeah.
And the markets weren't that crowded. So things that were software were taking off faster.
Okay.
Remember, this is back 2005.
Yeah, yeah.
So like it was a while ago now, 14 years ago, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so today, in the same way, the world's different. There's a lot more agencies.
Yeah,
and true. Services can be more efficient than they used to be.
Yeah.
They can be. They're not always.
They're not
like
always.
You're still looking at a 20 to 35% margin, depending on how you look at it.
Mm.
And so I think about margin a lot. I think about cost a lot. I think about things like headcount a lot, right? Mm. I believe that if you run an agency and you want to grow it, literally grow it, so grow it to like 9 figures in revenue a year, you're looking at 1,000 people or some kind of crazy number like that to really grow it into a very big agency.
Yeah.
Right? And you look at a software company, you don't need 1,000 people to make $100 million.
That's true.
Right? So for me, I believe people are the biggest opportunity and the biggest problem in businesses.
Mm.
And so if I can create an organization where the organization has less people and higher profit margin, and it might, you know, it might take a little longer to ramp up, but I can live with that, I'm happier.
Yeah.
And I still think there's like unlimited opportunity with software and creating software products.
Yeah. You also, you mentioned earlier self-funded versus raising venture. So talk me through that decision, because you did end up raising venture for the second one, but not the first. So what changed in your mind to do that?
Simply put, back then, this was about 2007, 2008. 2008 is when we raised money for Kissmetrics. It was how do we learn about this?
Yeah.
That's it. How do we learn about this thing we don't know anything about?
Meaning venture.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we had a thing that people cared about, right? Yeah. They wanted to fund. They actually didn't fund Crazy Egg. The investors wouldn't fund Crazy Egg.
Oh, okay.
And yet they would fund Kissmetrics.
Why was that?
It was just a different type of product, different type of business. And for some reason, that one attracted them.
Yeah.
Right? I don't have a good explanation.
Mm.
It's also time, right? The more time you're in the market as a human being, as a founder, doing stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes people, if they say no, eventually they say yes.
Yeah, for
right?
sure.
And so, and you know, things like Y Combinator, Techstars, 500 startups, all these other type of incubators and things like that they didn't exist.
Yeah.
Like we didn't have that option. Mm. So we were going to go at it until we learned how to get money.
Yeah.
And, you know, I happened to be in the Bay Area, which made a big difference by that time.
Yeah.
And so we raised money. And so, you know, if someone asked me today, I think it's easier than ever to raise money.
Mm.
It's also easier than ever to start a company. And it's harder than ever to raise your next round, Series A.
It's harder, you're saying?
Harder than ever. And I think it's also harder than ever to grow a company and scale.
Why is that?
Because it's so easy to start. Something has to give. Mm. It can't be easy to start and easy to grow. That's just not how the world works, right?
Well, maybe
we're human beings too. If it's easy to start, more people are starting companies.
That's true. But I guess you could, to play devil's advocate, 10 years ago, it was the easiest time to, maybe not 10 because we were just post-recession, but 2005.
Sure.
It was the easiest time to start a company then compared to 20 years before.
Yeah.
And it was probably easier to scale. But I guess now there's a life cycle that's slowed down. Is that accurate?
Well, when you think about it, the ease of starting today and even getting to a point where you are self-sufficient, if you're like an individual, is uncanny.
Mm.
So there's lots of competition, even if they're really small.
Okay.
And so that causes it to be harder to grow and stand out from the crowd, right? That's, you can create something like my new company, FYI.
Yeah.
And what we do is we help you find your documents in 3 clicks or less.
Mm.
And we could have put that out many years ago with exactly what we have, and our traction would be much higher because there's less stuff in the market.
Yeah.
There's less options across the board, right? And so when you think about it like that, it's just everything gets crowded. An industry gets crowded. This industry, if we call it tech, it's crowded now.
Yeah.
It's crowded because people made money.
Yeah.
and other human beings are like, oh, that makes money.
Like,
let's get into it.
Yeah, for sure.
Right?
Do you think another part of that is, if you think of how things spread 10 years ago through social media, let's say, the organic reach on those platforms was so much higher.
I think it's higher now.
Well, meaning when I say organic reach, meaning not number of users, but like if you've got 1 million followers, the number of people that see your posts
is
less now.
A lot,
because of the algorithm.
That's totally true. At the same time, there's more platforms now.
That's true.
So, and there's more people on the internet.
Mm.
Tremendously more
people,
right? So I would say that some of this stuff could cross itself out.
Yeah.
But I don't think it does. I think that the effort you have to put in and how many things you have to be great at today are much more than before.
Yeah.
You can't get away with not doing marketing.
Yeah.
You can't get away with just building a great product. You can't get away with just doing marketing and doing it really well.
Yeah.
You still need a product that people care about. Also, by the way, you need a product that actually has retention.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then people leave you and you don't actually build a strong, viable business.
Got you. And that's the part you're saying about more competition, more options, unlimited options almost right now. Great, man. You also mentioned you mentioned luck there, and you mentioned, I've heard you describe, we got lucky and one of them stuck, which was, I think, Crazy Egg. Right, and that worked. And I'd love to go into that in a little bit more detail. I actually really like the language you use, and I think you've been quite purposeful with using the term, we got lucky.
Yeah.
So tell me about that, because other people would say, well, no, you kind of semi-created your own luck. You tried 10 different things and one of them stuck. How do you kind of see that?
We got lucky or created our own luck. Like, I think if we're attempting to do things, so if we're doing things, we're already creating luck.
Yeah.
That's a baseline. Mm. So we got lucky because one thing worked. It could have been so that thing didn't work.
Yeah.
And we would have had to try 5 more things. We were just going to keep going.
Yeah.
So I would say what's more critical, or the lesson there, is persistence.
Yeah.
If the first thing you try doesn't work, who cares?
Yeah.
Try something else. Take your learnings.
So tell me about the future of work. This is something you guys have been working on with a report.
Yep.
And you've been doing research into. So why, first of all, why were you interested in this space? It sounds like your company has been remote since 2003.
Yep.
But why is this an area you guys are focused on with your new company?
Yeah. So Well, I'll give you a link first because the report is out, and it's at bit.ly/remote-report.
Mm.
You could go there, and I just found out that the report is about 40,000 pixels long.
Pixels long?
Pixels. So it's like really, really long.
Oh, it's literally like that. Okay.
Yeah, and it's like 6,000 words, but it's really long.
How many pages is that?
I have no idea.
Okay, okay.
Right, 20? I don't know, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I make it up for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's a really long report. One of the key metrics that I'll share is that 96% of people said they'd recommend working remotely to a friend.
Mm.
And what we learned as a result of that and all the analysis is that people love working remotely. People just love remote work.
Yeah.
So the reason we did this with my new company and we're doing this type of research is because a lot of people are talking about remote work.
Mm.
And quite frankly, we don't know squat about it.
Yeah.
Because there are great companies like Automattic and Buffer and GitLab now, and of course Basecamp, the 37 Signals folks, formerly known as 37 Signals folks, who have all written content. The Basecamp folks have written a book on the topic and talk about it a lot. And they've been doing it for like 16 years or something, maybe even longer than that. I think 20 years, actually, since 99 or something, since they came out, I believe. But I might be wrong. But they've had an office at different times. I don't know if they still have their office.
Yeah.
And so we just don't know how to do this yet. And there's a lot of connotations around remote work, like, well, a lot of people are saying they don't like the term.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So then now folks are like, oh, it's distributed work. And then folks are like, you know, and what I do, and you're going to really appreciate this, is I go look at, I do keyword research. So guess what? You know the main term?
Yeah.
Work from home. It's work from home. We are working from home. We are not doing remote work. We're not doing distributed work. The technical term is work from home.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right? And like, we've been doing this for a long time. In fact, when I did the keyword research, the majority of the terms are all related to jobs.
Oh, so because people are looking for working from home jobs.
Remote jobs, remote companies. It really is about jobs.
Yeah, you're right.
You're not typing in remote companies
to be a customer.
No, you're typing in remote companies to find a job, right? Work from home, all kinds of different professions. Mm. Work from home Amazon. I don't even know what that really means, but that's typed in quite a bit, right?
I think that might be, there's a lot of people searching for products to sell on Amazon and stuff like that.
Yeah, maybe. They're making it up, right? Right. Or like work from home gifts.
Oh, I don't know.
Remote job gifts. Like, I mean, these are the kind of terms I saw. And so like,
look,
we're at this major transition point, I think, of companies realizing something that I think is going to become more clear, which is all work is distributed. Mm. All work is remote. And a lot of our work is work from home as well.
Mm.
If you ever work from home in any way, you're doing distributed work. You're not in the office and working. Yeah. If you literally go to the office and leave, sure. If you don't do any work after that, right? Okay. So like, there are a lot of professions, obviously, like if you work at a restaurant, right? Or you work at a coffee shop where you're going and you're leaving and you're probably not doing any work outside of work. That being said, if you're a manager there or you run operations there, you're probably doing work outside of the office.
Most people do some sort of work. If you're in an office job or you're using email on your phone, that's technically not in the office.
So there's these technicalities.
Yeah.
There's these things where people are confused. And I think in this kind of confusion and complexity is a lot of opportunity.
Yeah.
And it's an opportunity to create a set of norms, a set of best practices, and really talk about the infrastructure that's missing and the infrastructure that we can create, the infrastructure that exists at different companies to essentially enable really high quality distributed work.
Okay. So why do you think people are averse to this in the first place? And when I say people, I guess we should split that between employers and employees, because employers, I can understand to a certain extent, they kind of want to keep an eye on what's going on maybe.
Sure.
It's probably one of the biggest reasons.
You're right.
What about employees? Do you think that there's actually people that are against that for whatever reason as well?
The challenges of remote work is what we learned about.
Yeah.
And a lot of the challenges are, the number one challenge is communication.
Mm.
And then all the other challenges are things like isolation, boundaries, social. And how they actually get, you know, be social in a sort of
that's
remote environment.
That's a big one for me.
Yeah, you like people. You want to meet them. You want to hang out. You want to talk, right?
I'm remote.
Yeah, you're like a talker. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, I thought, oh, I'm going to love it. And I do actually generally, I get so much more work done, first of all, which is probably one of your findings, because you're not being pestered all day and people coming up to you and stuff like that. But after a while, I'll realize, I'm like, I've been in my house all day and like, I need to get out of this hole and I need to speak to someone sort of thing. So I think that's one of those things that I didn't really think about when I started working remotely as well. At the same time, the pros outweigh the cons for me by far, so there's no comparison.
I think that when I would look to hire people 5 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, one of the first things I would say is you're gonna have to figure out how to be self-directed, self-motivated, and figure out how to do remote work.
Yeah.
If you aren't used to it. And a lot of it is personal because you get more freedom. But with freedom comes opportunity, but it also comes this like uncertainty of like, what do I do? Mm. How do I work?
You have to be more self-directed in many ways.
Yeah. And there's visibility problems too. Mm. When you're at work, people can see, hey, you know, you're sitting in your chair, you're working.
Yeah.
They can also see that you're not in your chair, you're not working.
Yeah.
They can also see how many meetings you're doing. I mean, people, there's so much visibility, right?
Yeah. But that's kind of an issue as well, because then it becomes a matter of people doing it for the sake of it. And this is very common, that people won't leave the office until the norm of the office, let's say it's 9 to 5 or 9 to 6. In a lot of companies, that's the rule, but really people are staying till 7:30 because they don't want to look like the person left before everyone else. And it's basically this culture of like working for work's sake, not like productive work, I think.
Right. And the way I like to say it is, and think about it, is really we all just want freedom.
Yeah.
We all want freedom to make our own decisions. Mm. And when you are in an office, you're told when to go to the office, when to have certain meetings in the office, when you need to be there, when you're going to eat, and when you leave.
Yeah.
And all those things go away with remote work for the most part. Sure, there's meetings you have to attend, things like that, but they generally go away. And when they go away, we don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So I think there are a lot of people that just have no idea how to work remotely yet because they've been so used to working in an office. It's also what we're used to even when we were kids. Mm. We were told when to go to school, when to eat, when to have recess, what class to go to, what number the class
follow
is,
the
where
schedule.
We have to walk, follow the schedule, follow the rules. So I think there's a lot of rules that need to be broken and changed and evolved as a result about how work happens and what the norms are.
From your report, was there anything that really surprised you or stood out that you were like, this isn't what I thought?
The stat I shared, which is 96% said they'd recommend it to a friend.
The people that do remote.
That blows me away. It's like very interesting that it's such a strong sentiment.
Mm. Well, what's the biggest challenge you think for companies allowing people to work remotely?
Yeah, so what we did was we researched individuals a lot. And when I look at what we learned, I think the company's biggest challenges are one that's what I would call a hidden challenge. Mm. And that hidden challenge is about productivity and efficiency. I feel like the companies that I know that are remote have the most challenge around how do we become productive? Mm. How do we remain productive? How do we grow the business with on a remote team where like we don't know what people are doing?
Yeah.
How do we figure out what people are doing? How do we coordinate?
Yeah.
How do we make sure stuff gets done on time? Which is a problem in any company.
Let alone if remote.
But you can't go like walk over to someone's desk and be like, hey, where's that thing at?
Yeah.
Or, hey, can we talk about the deadline? Are we going to hit it? Right? You can do it on Slack and things like that, which happens a lot. Mm. There are ways. I'm not saying it's impossible, but the emphasis is on people's accountability and almost the self-awareness of their own accountability or lack of it, which doesn't really hit when you're in an office because everyone's in the same place.
Mm.
You can just have those conversations and you can bug people, so to speak, which has its drawbacks, as you mentioned, but that happens. And that's how we stay in the know of what's going on and what people are doing.
Yeah. I do think for the sort of work I've done in the past, a lot of that is like sales partnerships sort of work. And there's an element of that sort of work. I mean, externally facing, I think face-to-face always beats like something of a video, generally speaking, in terms of really, the reason I do this podcast live in person is for that reason.
Yeah.
You can have a great chat over Skype, over Zoom or whatever, but there's a certain element of communication that doesn't translate.
Sure.
Does that mean the whole world should be going into one office to do the same job? Maybe not, because 90% of the work doesn't require that.
That's right.
I think for sales partnerships where you're having to build a connection with someone, as a person who's trying to proactively create that, I do think personally from my experience, I've noticed a massive difference in just getting face to face with someone.
Yeah.
And it's one of the metrics we would measure ourselves on as teams. To say
how many in-person meetings?
Yeah,
and like
to
that.
A certain extent. I wished it wasn't like that, but when I really looked at the data properly, I would see the progression of deals, let's say, or partnerships.
Momentum.
Yeah, and often really what it took was an initial meeting. It doesn't mean you have to have every meeting in person, but once you do have this kind of face-to-face connection, by the time you go back on Zoom or call or whatever, then there's a different level of relationship there.
I think a lot of it is how you build rapport, right? And how you really do it differently when you're remote.
Yeah.
Right? You learn how to do email really well, frankly speaking.
Yeah.
Right? You have to get probably 10 times better at email in order to make sure that the people that you're looking to partner with are aware that you exist. And you have to level up on how much value you can add without being in person and talking to them.
Yeah.
Or even getting on the phone with them or even getting on a video with them. Like, it has a lot to do with text-based communication and adding value in a different way than we're used to.
Yeah.
We're used to just showing up, right? Mm. And adding value, like you said.
Yeah.
Or people getting to know each other that way.
Yeah.
So here it's like, I emailed someone in this capacity after 3 weeks. They made an intro for me.
Mm.
I waited a while because I know they're kind of busy, right? And this is a BD person. And it's like, I have helped somebody they know, and they mentioned it when I emailed them. I emailed them and said, hey, thanks for the meeting. It was really great. I'm going to follow up with you when this specific thing happens in my business. Just wanted to, you know, say thanks
because
they made an intro. And I waited a while because there was no relevance there. And I know that in a little bit of a while, I'm going to have that follow up with them that's relevant to them that I said I'd have. So there's just a different cadence about how you build these relationships when you're doing it via email. And because of that, the person emailed me back right away and mentioned a mutual friend of ours and said, oh, you're helping them too. I'm like, yeah, I am.
Yeah,
that's great. You know, and then I it's just built up, right? And now they have like some construct in their head, right?
Yeah.
And things like that. So like, it's natural, but you're not doing it in person.
Mm.
In a way, it's almost better because you're not requesting a meeting all the time.
Yeah.
You're not, it's almost like for me, in-person things, even the kind of things you mentioned, are a crutch when it comes to solving problems that people have around remote work.
Mm.
We have to figure out how to do this stuff without meeting in person. We really do if we're going to scale these businesses, especially these newer businesses that are fully remote that many of us are building.
Yeah, for sure. But do you not think there's a big difference between externally facing versus your own team? Because your own team, you have a little bit more... ongoing.
Yeah, that was an external sort of relationship. And yeah, I think there is a lot of value in doing it in person. I'm not debating the value.
Yeah.
It's more so, are you using it as a crutch? Are you using it as an excuse to not figure it out?
Because
a lot of times, like someone you're trying to partner with is not reachable physically anyway.
Yeah.
What do you do in those situations?
Yeah.
You go fly out to them?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah. If someone's trying to get started with this and they've never done this before, you've got a long history of doing this. So I'm a company X and I want to start allowing some of my employees to work remotely or hire people remotely. Are there a few things you'd recommend for getting started in the first place?
I think a lot of it is a cultural change.
Okay.
And so it's much harder than most people would think if you're already at some level of scale. If you're less than about a dozen people or 20 people, you can probably pull it off. But what ends up happening, the biggest challenge that companies face around it is how the remote people feel like they're second-class citizens in the company. That's the worst thing ever.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So an example of that, just real quick, is like, just one example is like, if you're doing an all-hands meeting, and you're in an office, and like, let's say 20% of the company is outside the office, everyone in the office should be in front of their computers, not in a room all together.
Yeah.
That's how you make people feel like equals.
Yeah.
People should feel like equals in the company, right? Like not equals like seniority and hierarchy. No, 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 no. Equals like they're treated the same way as everyone else from a culture and a HR and like a, you know, sentiment perspective. And like that's not the case. That's very hard to do if you're going to have different ways of communicating when everyone's involved.
Yeah. But don't you think that the communication, like if we were all on a computer, like it really takes away from... Like, I think we're always so distracted that that's one of the few times people are kind of put their laptops down and actually engage and listen. So,
but what about the people that are not there?
That's
20%. How do you set it up for them?
You're right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And then they are not going to feel like equals.
Yeah. Okay. That's a great point.
I guarantee you this doesn't scale unless you treat everyone the same in those scenarios.
Yeah.
And so that's a challenge. Mm. What you just said is a challenge. Companies are not ready to accept that.
Yeah.
And once they start realizing they're going to probably need to accept that, I think you'll see a lot of best practices and shifts in this kind of thinking. And also, we have the technology now.
Yeah. Last point around remote work is, I think you've talked, I mean, your whole company, FYI, now is about helping people find documents quicker, right? In three clicks, I think it is.
Three clicks or less.
Three clicks or less. I love it. So that now when I went through this last night, I was thinking, like, where does this tie in with FYI? And I said, okay, cool, it makes sense. Like, you're going to help people manage these documents better.
Well, we connect to all the apps they use.
Yeah.
And documents are a big part of making sure you have accountability and are actually able to work on a remote team. It's also something that we're excited about. We're a remote company. So a lot of times when it comes to, like, the things that you put out in the world as a business,
yeah,
when you're excited about them, it's on.
Yeah,
like, you can put a lot of momentum behind it and rally the troops, so to speak.
Yeah.
And we're able to do that on this topic because we're fully remote, right? And like I said, it's something where, like, you know, I used to tell people, like, I don't wish remote on anybody.
Yeah.
But the problem now is, like, we're all remote. If you have agencies you work with and they're not coming in person, you're remote.
Yeah.
If you have freelancers and contractors, you're remote. You're doing distributed work. You're doing remote work. And so it's more of the excitement around that and the fact that we're at a place now where the tools are there. So we're going to spend a lot more time on remote work at my company to help essentially, like, do our best to share what we learn, educate the world, and learn what we need to sort of move the whole business world forward and get towards this kind of future reality that's happening.
Yeah,
no matter what you think, it's happening.
What about, do you have any employees of any of your companies that are, like, digital nomad style? Like, they're moving around the world, they're in different time zones. Like, have you experienced that?
Yeah, so there's, like, a company called Remote Year that helps you do that and things like that. I've worked with companies where I'm having meetings and the folks, it becomes a topic.
Yeah.
What country are you in right now? What are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you discovering? Yeah, definitely. And it's really just about when there's, like, products like that exist in the market that help you do it, they're making sure you have internet. They're making sure you're able to get your work done. They're helping you out with that. So it's really just about having a great internet connection.
Yeah.
And when you don't, being able to still manage and be able to get your work done in your meetings and things like that. So yeah, I'm a fan of just, again, flexibility, freedom. Yeah. That's what we all want, and we want to be happy.
For sure, man. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, and I'm looking forward to going through the report, and we'll kind of share this with the podcast as well.
Sounds good.
Switching gears a little bit.
Sure.
We've kind of touched on it in this conversation just now, but what I think you and Neil Patel and a lot of your companies that you started before have been great at is really marketing and getting your brand in front of the right people. And this was a great example for me of content marketing that straight off the bat you don't necessarily realize is even related to your company,
because
it's just valuable. It's like report that's valuable for the world, and you're not saying, hey, buy our product right here, but we happen to be a brand talking about these areas that we either live because we're remote companies or it's adjacent to what we're working on. So just that is kind of what's referred to as content marketing, I guess, in some worlds. So how do you guys think about marketing for this particular company and before? Because I think you're one of the best at doing that.
Sure, thank you. I'll take the compliment.
Yeah.
but always trying to get better. And what I learned, just like, you know, when you started this off, you said, you didn't say it this way, but, like, you have a brand of being really helpful.
Yeah.
And you're not just saying that. It's what people tell you about me if you go ask them, right?
Yeah.
That's brand. Mm. That's a personal brand.
Yeah.
So how do you extend, not the helpfulness, but that concept when you think about a company? There's only so much you can say about what you do as a company.
Mm.
We help you find your documents. You connect to a bunch of apps. We help you find your documents. We have a Chrome extension. We have a desktop app. We have a web app.
Yeah.
It's going to get boring. Like, we can talk about the benefits.
Yeah.
Saves you time, saves you money, makes your team more productive. And probably makes you money in some ways if I really get deep into how we help, right?
Yeah.
Helps you see what's going on in your company, blah, blah, blah. There's a bunch of stuff I can say.
Mm.
It's all powerful stuff. But if we're sitting there and constantly saying stuff about us, we're not actually speaking to our customers and what matters to them.
Yeah.
So we know remote work matters to our customers.
Okay.
We know that the fact that they're switching tools all the time and evaluating different document apps, and there's all these new ones coming out, that matters to them.
Yeah.
We know that there's a certain segment of our customers that are freelancers. So they matter to us.
Mm.
So we talk about them sometimes, right?
Yeah.
So it's really just about deeply understanding your audience and the things that they care about and making sure that you have enough things to talk about that are related to your audience.
Yeah.
And when you talk about those things, you're basically gonna be able to pull in the folks that gravitate towards it. So we're always thinking about not, this is what we do, and we need to share that. Mm. We're always thinking about who's our audience and what do they care about, mm. and how do we align with what they care about more than we align with what we care about.
Yeah.
Because if we align with what they care about, they're going to care about us.
Yeah. That, I love that. Yeah. And you mentioned keyword research before. And like, how much of this is just conceptual in terms of we know our customers through conversations and knowing them qualitatively versus you actually looking at content, keyword research for the case of content marketing? Like, it seems like you've got a background in that. So there's a bit of both.
I'll take data any way I can get it.
Yeah.
And so I think keyword data, by nature of it, as you know from being at Google, is intent driven.
Mm.
So if I want to understand my audience, I'm going to go after the intent. And so in this case, it's like, okay, we already know our audience is talking about remote work, distributed work, future of work. Future work is probably the concept. They're also, on the enterprise level, talking about the consumerization of enterprise.
Consumerization of enterprise.
That's a big thing in that topic. So there's a few of these topics, right?
Yeah.
So we do keyword research to figure out, okay, related to remote work, that's what I can tell you today, work from home. Work from home is where it's at. That's the word. That's the terminology. That's how people, on average, describe it across the world.
Mm.
Yes, there's pockets that describe it as remote work. Remote work is a thing. Distributed work is actually way less popular than work from home or remote work.
Yeah, because it feels very much more like industry specific. Like some industries might say that, but when you're an average Joe living in the middle of nowhere, you say, I want to work from home.
And truthfully, you know how hard it is to spell distributed? Right? Like literally, I'm not making fun of anyone.
No,
it's
true.
Literally hard. Not everyone knows how to spell it.
Yeah.
And so why they don't type it in Google. You have to know, work from home. Everyone knows how to spell that. Mm. My 5-year-old knows how to spell that.
Yeah.
Right? That you have to think in those terms. So I love keyword research because it helps you understand the audience in a way you wouldn't without doing it.
Yeah.
So that's my kind of rant on it, which is like, it's just another data point.
For sure.
Just like if I type in remote work in Twitter search, I'll understand about remote work from Twitter search.
Yeah.
If I type in work from home, I'll understand that.
Yeah.
Right? So there's so many different ways we can go get data points, get understanding about our customer. Why wouldn't we use it? So it's almost like, to me, a norm. We should be doing that.
Yeah, for sure. Love that, man. Well, we'll definitely share that out. So thanks for going into that. I just love that you do keyword research, man, because it's one of my favorite things.
Me and you both.
Yeah. So just switching gears a little bit, kind of, again, going back to your background and how you've done so many different things, one of the things that struck out to me when I was doing the research on your background was you've had few different companies and they all kind of operate in different areas. Like there's some common thread with SaaS, there's some common thread with measurement to a certain extent, but the new one isn't that.
No.
So it's very different. And you strike me as someone who just loves analyzing businesses and looking at opportunities, right? So if you were thinking of what has led you to starting those companies in the past, were there certain common threads that you were looking out for when you were looking at ideas or more than just an opportunity?
Yeah. The way I think about that is just one saying that I have, which related to what you said, which is people ask me what my hobby is. And now I've just come to the conclusion, because I can't help it, that my hobby is thinking about other people's companies or other people's businesses.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just something on my mind all the time. And when I think about it like that, I would say that as human beings, we tend to like to find problems and solve them.
Yeah.
And so I'm just on a very fundamental level looking for problems and looking to solve them.
Mm.
And so it doesn't really matter what the problem is, what category it's in, or who has it. I'm just looking to find problems and solve them.
Mm.
So, and get better at finding the right problems to solve, especially when it comes to creating a business. And that has a lot to do with talking to people.
Yeah.
It has a lot to do with, research and keyword research all the way to customer interviews or interviews for people and learning what they're troubled with and things like that. So to me, it just really boils down to that kind of attitude, that kind of way of thinking, which is we are fundamentally designed and built to solve problems, but we have to find them first.
Yeah.
Right. And some of us are built like that to a fault. So for me, if I don't have a major problem in my life, I'll go make one. And that's a little bit of a newer realization for me. So
in what way?
I like solving problems.
So
if everything's good, I'm going to make a problem.
So you find problems.
Subconsciously, for whatever reason, right? And it's a pattern I found for myself that I'm actually working on.
Mm. Working on meaning you're trying to avoid doing that, or you're working on to do it more? Because it's probably both.
Both.
Yeah.
I'm looking to avoid doing it in a way where it's unproductive.
Okay.
Or the way that it hurts me.
Get you.
And other
okay.
people.
Okay, for sure.
Like, you can have a conversation. You can be irritated about not having a problem. You have no problem with this person, and then you create a problem.
And you find
right,
the problem.
That's the psychology, right? Like, we're just like, we're basically just repeating different patterns and cycles.
Yeah.
Mine is definitely, I love solving problems.
Yeah.
And if I don't have a major problem or a set of them, my mind is not occupied.
So you're trying
and
to
thus
find
I'm trying
problems.
To occupy my mind.
That's a great, that's right. probably a very common thing that people do and never get to grips with in terms of, like, you're, if you're always
yeah.
fine, maybe I'm the same, actually. Yeah. I'd have to think about that more, but that's
I'm only shaking my head a little bit because I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
This is my experience.
Yeah,
I'm happy
yeah.
to share it.
Yeah.
I'm sure other people are like that, but, you know, people are different.
Yeah.
Some people are not like that.
So
right?
what about the non-destructive side of creating problems, but
yeah.
actually looking out for real problems? Are there ways that you've kind of think you're thinking about things in certain details that you might not have thought about before, that other people might not necessarily be thinking about
sure.
day to day?
Sure. I feel like, let's just talk about business for a second. Life is a little bit different.
Yeah.
It's, meaning non-work life.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
there's a lot of subjectiveness. And part of the reason is because of the L word, love.
Yeah.
Love is not rational.
Yeah,
love
yeah.
is quite irrational. When you try to rationalize love, you get screwed yeah. One way or another, right?
Mm.
So my take on the business side is that business should be basic.
Mm.
We should always be able to look at our business and understand what needs to happen next.
Mm.
And that has to do with identifying the right problem to solve. For example, with FYI, we launched it in May 22nd of 2018,
mm.
so a little bit over a year ago. We launched a product for individuals. We had some team price points, but we launched it for individuals on purpose.
Mm.
We wanted to make a great product that individuals loved first.
Yeah.
Now all we're doing, since we launched it and built some things out and figured out, okay, individuals love it enough, we are building a product for teams.
Mm.
And that's our main focus right now. We know we will not build the kind of business we want to build unless we build a product that companies and teams want to use like all the time.
Yeah.
And their whole company. So that's all we're doing. And that's
yeah.
a hard challenge.
Mm.
Not many products are used by whole companies.
Mm.
So this is our whole thesis right now. And that's all we're working towards. In fact, in one of our Slack channels, our product Slack channel, it says build a product teams love.
Yeah. Keep it simple.
And then yeah. once we do that, we'll be like build a product companies love.
Mm. Okay.
Once we do that, it might be something crazier and more ambitious, right?
Mm.
But it's like this ambition and this like development of the problem
yeah.
and the solution is just basically business fundamentals.
Yeah, that's great, man. I love that. It, you mentioned relationships there.
Yeah.
You mentioned love not being rational.
Yeah.
And whatever you want to share, of course, because that's your personal life. But one thing beyond being married is you worked with Neil Patel, who's your brother-in-law.
Yeah.
You started companies together.
Yeah.
And I've heard you talk about relationships and keeping relationships separate in a way.
Yeah.
And you've talked about like having business relationships. The pro of that versus just being friends with someone at work is that you can have tough discussions when you know you need to make a decision, but
yeah.
you don't want it to be personal because that's your brother-in-law or your sister or whoever.
Yeah.
So how have you balanced that? Because those two things don't always go hand in hand. So have you got better at that over time?
Yeah, I think I have, and I messed it up too
yeah.
when I think I figured it out. And like my current thinking on it is there's two sides to human beings.
Mm.
There's basically the pragmatic side.
Yeah.
It's not even rational, it's pragmatic. Pragmatic is basically the idea that I will make the best decision possible based on some rationale that
okay.
I figure out. Facts, truths,
yeah.
right? That's what
yeah.
being pragmatic is. So it's pragmatic. You can call it rational if you want to really make it basic, right?
Yeah.
But let's say factual. So there's a factual side of life, right?
Mm.
And relationships, factual sides, facts. And then there's the emotional side of relationships.
Mm.
And those are feelings.
Yeah.
And what I try to do when I'm hearing something from somebody,
mm.
which one are they coming at me from?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it super rational or is it feelings and emotional?
Mm.
And if it's feelings and emotional, I need to listen. I need to not respond. Because
yeah.
I need to understand what
yeah.
part of it is rational and pragmatic and
yeah.
what's and usually the core of some emotion or feeling is something really rational.
Yeah.
It could be like you told me something 5 years ago and it's still on my mind.
Yeah.
And the stuff I'm saying at you has to do with that.
Completely.
But they don't know that.
Mm.
It's just something on their mind that's like deeply rooted. So to me I'm now just finding the filter and
mm.
figuring out what I need to do. In the past I didn't know the difference.
Yeah.
I didn't really realize that there's these two things going on with people and
that's
myself.
Yeah.
And so now I split up all relationships into the two and say, okay, if we're having a super emotional relationship right now,
yeah,
it's probably not a good thing.
Yeah.
It's probably not.
Yeah.
Even if it's an extreme like love or something like that, there's probably something there that we're both solving for that we might not understand because it's emotions and feelings.
Yeah.
So in some of my relationships today, it's been a challenge and an opportunity to cut out a lot of that.
Mm.
And say, hey, like, and this evolves over time. You don't always realize it.
Yeah.
But you kind of put that aside because you got caught up in that.
Yeah.
And then you make it a very pragmatic, rational thing. And that's not to say that I don't feel things or you shouldn't feel things or you shouldn't be emotional or any of that. Yeah, you can be whatever you want.
Yeah.
But when you need to make decisions and you need options and you have choices you need to think through, it isn't going to happen through emotion and feelings.
Yeah.
That might spur some kind of change. But at the end of the day, change happens in a very rational and factual, truthful manner.
Yeah.
When the change is actually happening.
Yeah.
Whatever caused the change might not be like that.
And that might be the love, emotional. That might be the other emotions.
Right.
I get you.
Right. So just trying to split that up has been really helpful in any relationship.
But yeah.
Whether it's somebody that's reporting to me or somebody I'm reporting to, if I ever report to anyone, even though I don't, or the parallel folks in my life, my co-founders, my partners, or even my wife in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah,
and
for
like,
sure.
So I'm just, the way that starts is by me being conscious of where am I coming from.
Yeah.
That helps me realize where other people are coming from when they come at me.
Do you mind me asking, have you ever gone to therapy before?
I've definitely done therapy.
Yeah.
And I've definitely learned a lot from it.
Yeah.
And one of the main things I learned is that it can be really helpful to talk to a neutral party.
For sure.
That doesn't give a crap about what's going on in your life.
They're except not your
they're
brother,
just
your sister, your
they're
cousin.
Just there to help you. And there's different extremes of whether they give advice or not.
Yeah.
You know, my extreme is I'd rather have someone that doesn't give advice.
And
helps me think through things for myself. But there's other therapists that are much more focused on the advice side, which is totally fine, whether it's coaching or whatever. So I'm a fan of any opportunity I can have to talk to a neutral third party about something
that I'm
dealing with.
That's great. I'm similar. And one thing that you mentioned there before, which I've thought about and has helped me a lot, might be useful for someone listening, is separating any situation, whether that's a relationship or just your own personal thoughts, into something that happened and separating the story from the facts.
Yep.
So story is often the emotional part. And it's not to say, of course, emotions are incredibly important in their own way. They bring the nuance and the color to what makes life worth living.
They make life exciting in some ways.
Exactly. Yeah. But like often, let's say something bad happens and you'll say, oh, well, so-and-so didn't turn up for this meeting and that must mean they want to quit the company that I started. I'm using that as an extreme example.
Yeah.
But in that case, the fact was they didn't turn up. The story you created in your head, which we all do, is because this. And that is the part where when you can separate the two, you can write down, okay, well, this is what actually happened. And then when you speak to them, you don't assume, you figure it out.
Just
and
facts.
A lot of the time, it's never the case. It was actually your own insecurities and other stuff, like maybe I'm not worthy enough for them to be at my company. I'm already feeling imposter syndrome, like all those different things. And not to overcomplicate it, but I've always found that to be a really helpful tool in my kind of like mental thinking to be able to say, this is how I'm going to make a decision based on what I do know. And if there's emotional part that I don't fully know yet, maybe I need to do some more digging to figure out the fact. So I think that was probably similar to what you were thinking.
Yeah, I mean,
about,
I think people say get in touch with your emotions or get in touch with your feelings. I would say get in touch with the facts.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
you know to be true
yeah.
and what someone else would agree with you
mm.
for it to be true. So that's really getting in touch with the truth.
Yeah, for sure. Love that, man. You've also, I loved earlier that you talked about luck and we've kind of talked about luck a little bit.
Yeah.
But there's also a bunch of companies you've started that didn't necessarily work out in the way that you started.
Yeah.
You set out. So, I mean, I don't know if you're open to sharing, but is there one, not, and I'm not trying to turn this into some failure porn thing, like, oh, I messed up and now I'm doing great. It's like genuinely like a time that wasn't actually that great and you didn't necessarily gain that much out of it. If I said that to you, is there a moment that you think in time that that was kind of a low point?
I think that my lowest points are when I realized I could have done better.
Mm.
And I realized what that could have been. And for me personally, it's usually not in business, because in business, I usually figure out, okay, could have done better, learn from it, let's move on.
But personally?
Personally, I think it's when I feel like I did wrong in a relationship.
Yeah.
And there's almost no way to reconcile that.
Mm.
And a lot of times it has to do with people's styles.
Mm.
So for example, there are people who, when there's conflict, they go towards it and want to go through it and talk to the person, especially when there's conflict with someone else. That's me. But there's people in my life that are the opposite.
Yeah.
Who don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And so if you think about that, they don't want to talk about it. Not that they're running away from it.
Yeah.
But let's say they're running away from it.
Yeah.
Just to use an analogy, I don't think that's negative.
Yeah.
And I'm running towards it. That means I'm always chasing them.
Yeah.
And it means I'll never get what I need.
Okay.
So that's like a big learning, right? To be like, when there's conflict, I run towards it. When there's conflict, the other person wants to run away from it.
Mm.
And if there is conflict in those situations, what do you do?
Mm. So what do you do?
You get good with it regardless of who you are. And it's all, I think it's worse for the person that wants to run towards it that can't. I can't run towards it.
If
so what do I do?
Running away.
Because they're running away from it. They're basically, their way to deal with the conflict is basically not confront it, which I don't think is a bad thing. That's like how they do it. They might confront it personally, but they will not confront the person.
Mm.
They will not have the discussion.
Yeah.
So then it's like, I think over time you can get to a place where the person's willing to.
Mm. Okay.
But that might take a while. And if you value it, the relationship, and you still have to continue it for whatever reason or get to continue it, you're going to figure it out eventually, but it'll take a lot of time.
Yeah.
If you're not going to continue the relationship, it doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
You can just move on. Who cares what you did? Who cares what you didn't do?
Mm.
You're not going to be able to, it doesn't matter. You know, part of this is like realizing that it doesn't really matter what other people think about you.
Yeah.
At all.
Is that something you think you struggle with?
I think it's something, I'm learning.
Yeah.
It's something I'm learning to get good with.
Mm.
I used to want everyone to think I'm nice.
Yeah.
And helpful.
Yeah.
Hence, I have a brand in a certain way, right?
Yeah.
At this point, I'm like, it doesn't matter what they think about me. I'm just going to do the best I can.
Yeah.
I don't have time to worry about anyone else.
Do you feel like that's the rational part talking?
That's right.
But the feeling is there.
Right.
And the feeling is, as to continue what we were saying before.
Sure.
I'm probably the same. I also probably want to be liked.
Yeah.
And a paid therapist could probably tell me why I want to always be liked, right? And that's...
I could tell you. We could dig into your childhood. No problem.
Yeah.
No problem.
No, it's probably
we don't need
fairly,
a therapist for this.
Exactly.
Therapists are cool, though.
Yeah, good. Yeah. But it's probably fairly straightforward. But so
sounds like he knows. Sounds like he knows. That's what I gotta say.
Big reveal.
Yeah,
big
woo.
Reveal. Yeah. But no. But real talk though, like being able to, that's kind of again that same thing you said before. Like the rational part is, I don't need to care what people think. But naturally, I do care. So
of course you do.
So then, how do you actually deal with that though? Because you're constantly kind of dancing between the two. And you kind of can't fake all the rationality in the world doesn't tell you. I'll give another example beyond us. Someone passes away.
Yeah.
Right? The rationality is we're all going to die. The emotion which takes over is that's my partner, my parent, my whoever.
Sure.
Right? So I just think, and I'm the same as you. I really try to be as rational as possible, but I just think the complexity of humans means that emotions are there for a reason.
So when my mom died, I was 8.
Okay.
And my dad told me something really powerful at that time.
Mm.
We were outside our apartment. This was in New York, on 72nd in York.
Yeah.
That's where we used to live. And he basically said, look around the world.
Mm.
Has anything changed? No.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I said no.
I just got.
I was 8 years old. I said no.
Yeah, your dad's a G.
No, it gets better.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, for them it hasn't, but for us it has. It done.
Oh my god, I'm gonna drop that. That's the mic. Oh my god, wow.
Yeah. I was like, okay.
Man, your dad's got bars,
got
man.
Yeah.
So he's been dropping bars since a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Is he just like a very wise guy?
He likes to help people.
How did you take that as an 8-year old?
I think he really believed in being strong despite what's happening.
Yeah.
And being able to just get through things. And it doesn't mean you don't have emotions or feelings. It just means that, like, he wasn't rationalizing. He was literally taking a feeling and an emotion that he was feeling and turning it into a fact and a truth. Nothing's changed for anyone else.
It's changed for us.
It's changed for us, though, forever. And that's how it is.
Yeah.
So you better get good with it. And he didn't say it like that, but, like, the way the 8-year-old took it was like, okay, so I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Something has changed. I don't have a choice. There is no choice that I have. The world has created this, and I can't do anything about it. So why bother with it?
Yeah.
Why worry about it? Make it your new reality.
I love that, man.
Right?
That's powerful, man.
I mean,
that is tough. Because when you said the first line, I was already like, oh, this is going to be good. And then I was like, man, that is deep. Well, your dad still does the nonprofit stuff now.
Yeah. He still great. Works and he does the nonprofit stuff. He got remarried at 60 a few years ago. So yeah, he's great. Kicking it.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that, man. I know that's obviously very personal. But we're going to wrap up soon. I know you've got stuff to do as well.
Sure.
But this has been awesome, man. Really enjoyed this.
We've been
chatting about all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Last couple of things just to kind of wrap up. We've talked about things that make you happy, things that make you successful on paper, things that make you rich, things that make you satisfied. And to me, all of those things are part of what I would call happiness. And it's a very broad term, right? For you, when I say successful, are there not just what does it mean to you, but are there people you look at, whether they're people you know or outside of that, that you think of, and kind of what makes those people successful to you?
I think, you know, I'm going to say this thing and it's kind of like cheesy, but, like, but I think I admire people who are living their truth, who are true to themselves.
Yeah.
And that has a lot to do with knowing yourself. And I think it's a journey and I don't think anyone's perfect. Mm. I mean, look at Elon Musk, right? You could say he's successful. He's still learning a lot.
For sure.
Look at his tweets and stuff, right? Like you could say the same for Jeff Bezos. Look at like the sort of marriage things and all those things that he just went through, right? That are public, right? So we can talk about them, but he's probably going through those for years.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like nobody's perfect. And so I don't really look up to anyone in that way. Mm. I admire people who are living their truth. I admire people who are resilient and who kind of can evolve and change over time. And we all are like that. So it's just a matter of looking at it from that perspective for me.
Last thing, man. You've been doing all sorts of stuff in the business world, investing, starting companies. I don't know your personal situation, your financial situation, but it sounds like you've done pretty well for yourself, thankfully.
Sure. Yeah.
You could probably not have to necessarily do work every day of the week if you didn't want to.
Sure.
But what stops you from doing that? Like, I know you enjoy talking about businesses and stuff like that, but what stops you from saying, you know what, I've actually had enough. I just want to spend time with my wife and kids. I'm going to take up some other hobbies or whatever it might be. Like, what's kind of keeping you going in this?
I like building things. I like creating things. I like solving problems.
Yeah.
So there is no like retirement. There's no like stop.
Yeah.
There's no go find a hobby. I already have one.
Yeah.
And I do get to choose. Yes, I am in a place where I get to choose what I want to do. Mm. And I choose to do what I'm doing right now. And that might change.
Love that, man.
But like I'll always be doing something.
Yeah, sure. Man, this has been great.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we've gone from a roller coaster of laughing and getting serious and coming back.
Oh my God, you're about to cry. Sorry.
No, thanks again, man. Yeah. I appreciate you taking time. Again, if you're listening to this, thanks again to TuneIn Radio for hosting us in San Francisco today. And people can follow you on
HNSHAH on Twitter.
And usefyi.com is the
new
company.
That's my new company,
And there's going to be a report, which we'll obviously link to.
Yep.
And if you're listening to this on the podcast, you can watch on youtube.com/CreatorLabFM. Make sure you go check that out and share this with all your friends, because this was definitely up there, man.
Thank you
so much, brother.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. We've got to do this again for sure.
Yeah.
Cheers, man. I hope you enjoyed that. If you did, please share this with your friends. I'll be bringing you some incredible guests over the coming weeks. You can subscribe on iTunes, on Stitcher, or any podcast app you're using. You can also subscribe to the email list on the website. Just go to creatorlab.fm/subscribe. You'll be able to get every single episode, free giveaways, and exclusive content straight to your inbox. You can also listen to all the episodes on creatorlab.fm with all the show notes, books, links, any resources that were mentioned in the conversations. And please say hello. You can send me an email directly. That is hello@creatorlab.fm, or just find me on any social network. The username is creatorlabfm. I look forward to hearing from you. Enjoy.